The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 3 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 17th of April. I do hope you're very well indeed, and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. And it's good to be back after a wee week off last week, thanks to Donald Kavanagh, as always, looking after things expertly. We have another busy one for you today, but we want you involved by WhatsApp and texting 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 07491 25000, or if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. Now, those of you who wish to watch the show can do so by logging on to YouTube or Facebook. Search out Highland Radio. You'll see us live there. Give us a like and a subscribe. It does help, you know. And you can also watch directly on our website. Good morning to Charlie. Thank you for welcoming us back and rightly recognising Donald doing an excellent job. Good morning to you, Anne and Michael, all joining us to watch the stream. Okay, let's have a look at the newspapers for this Monday morning. A bit milder today than yesterday, wasn't it? Really quite pleasant. The Donegal News, their lead story, People of Chrysler presented with Donegal Person of the Year. The Bonington Hotel in Dublin hosted up to 400 people on Saturday night for the annual Donegal Person of the Year presentation event, where the people of Chrysler were honoured as the 2022 recipients of the award. And we were down there. We were very lucky to be down there for it. And it was obviously going to be incredibly difficult to strike a balance, but they think they did so perfectly. And it was a wonderful honour to the people of Chrysler and everyone affected by that awful tragedy. Many highlights. Matt McGranahan performed a unique piece written specifically for the event and for the people, which was really something else. And we hope to have him in live performing that at some time in the not too distant future. We know 10 people were killed and several injured following an explosion at the Apple Green service station in the village of Chrysler on Friday, October 7th last year. The community was left numbed by the tragedy, and families, residents, first responders and countless others are still coming to terms with what happened on that Friday afternoon. And it was a very poignant night where family members of some of those killed, with people first on the scene of the tragedy, came together at the Donegal event in the capital. Many Donegal people travelled to Dublin for the occasion, while Donegal folk living in the city turned out in big numbers in honour to honour Chrysler and the courage of community spirit of its people. The Derry News this morning tells us that Bill Clinton, the 42nd President of America, will deliver the keynote address at Derry's Guild Hall on Tuesday afternoon. That's tomorrow. The event has been organised by the John and Pat Hume Foundation to present a posthumous tribute to John Hume and David Trimble, 1998 Nobel Peace Prize laureates. On to the Nationals now. The Irish Times this morning tells us that a report into the secondment of former Chief Medical Officer Dr. Tony Houlihan to Trinity College Dublin concludes that he should not have been involved in aspects of the move. It's understood that the long-awaited report, due to be published as soon as this week, does not contain any adverse findings against Dr. Houlihan, but does identify issues with the structure of the process. According to multiple sources with knowledge of the report, it states that the former CMO should not have been exclusively personally involved in the negotiation of research funding linked to the appointment. That's not surprising, is it, that that was found to be not appropriate? It didn't feel appropriate at the time, and it still isn't. On to the Independent now, and Hillary Clinton has called on Northern Ireland's political parties to get back into business as she praised the Windsor framework as an opportunity during an event in Belfast. Speaking at a Washington Ireland programme event yesterday, Mrs. Clinton, who is the current Chancellor of Queen's University, praised the deal between the UK and the EU to address the Northern Ireland Protocol. Given the Windsor framework, this is an opportunity unlike any for growth, investment and business expansion, because Northern Ireland now has a unique and privileged position, she said. Ms. Clinton and her husband, former US President Bill Clinton, are in Belfast to attend events marking the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. Okay, and that runs all week. I think there's a 3-day conference, isn't there? Which will be well attended, I'm sure. And you can watch it online too. We'll tell you more about that maybe a little later in the week. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And Taoiseach Leo Varadkar is just two bad opinion polls away from being axed by his own party after barely 100 days back as Taoiseach, members of Fine Gael have warned. Though I don't believe that for a second, to be honest with you. But anyway, that's what the this article says. Unease is rife within the party after a recent poll put Fine Gael at 15%, a result that could see the party drop to 20 seats or fewer and be consigned to the margins of political life. In a politically embarrassing move, the dissident wing of the party plans to grill Mr. Varadkar at Fine Gael's notoriously leaky parliamentary party meeting this week. One rep source said the 15% won't be magicked away. Some of the so-called usual suspects will raise it at next week's parliamentary party meeting. Another respected Fine Gael TD said of Mr. Varadkar, he won't be sacked on the basis of one opinion poll, but if there are two more, he is gone. And he said about Enda, nothing. As he said about Enda, nothing personal, just business. That poll was the talk of the party. On 15%, it's not just a few country TDs that are gone. They're all gone. Pascal Donoghue, Neil Richmond, Pika Burke, even Leo himself. He carved out a seat brilliantly when he was young, but at 15%, he's gone, they warned. So that's coming apparently from within the party, though I don't bite for a second. And also, it's difficult. Those figures don't always translate, do they, into how many seats one might win or lose. But anyway, still, there's a lot of work to do to bounce back from that. The Irish Daily Star this morning. The bill for housing Ukrainian refugees in Ireland will hit 1 billion within weeks, figures revealed. The state has so far paid out 840 million, of which 350 was spent since the beginning of this year. The Department for Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth, which is responsible for looking after Ukrainians who came here to flee the war, confirmed most of the money was used to provide accommodation. It's understood that millions owed to housing providers across the country in as many cases 3 to 5 months in arrears were paid up to date last week. Obviously, they're paying the expensive ones, the hotels, the sort of people that have made little business out of it and not so little at all. I wonder if any of you contacted offering accommodation to the council. Do you remember they said it would all be sorted within 2 weeks? Have they taken up any of those offers? Is there are any Ukrainian refugees being moved to that cheaper accommodation, I wonder? A department spokesperson said this year the department has paid out almost 350 million. This has been paid out on a weekly basis, rising steadily over time. This week and last week, the department paid out a somewhat larger volume of payments than in previous weeks, including a number of very overdue invoices in line with our commitment to prioritise these. And that's something that this government, whatever government, is going to have to continue to provide for the foreseeable future, I would imagine. The Irish Sun this morning, some American media outlets have blasted Joe Biden for taking a taxpayer-funded family reunion to Ireland. The US president's four-day Irish trip was toasted as a success here, but many critics stateside said it had no political purpose. Now, the problem with American media, and it's getting that way here, is you have a camp that's pro-Biden and a camp that's anti-Biden, and never the twain shall meet. So I really trying to gauge what it all means. Looking at the American media, it doesn't make much sense. It depends where it was broadcast, of course. But we know Biden flew first to the north to mark the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. He then spent 3 days meeting Irish dignitaries and visiting his ancestral homes in Louth and Mayo. So what did you think of it all? I know we've kind of talked about this a bit, but we haven't been on air since he addressed the crowds in Mayo and what have you. I think the bill for the Republic here for us effectively was 50 million. Now, I'm not sure if I dreamt that or read it. I'm sure I read it, which is a big amount of money. But given the connection between the countries, given the amount of American companies here and so on and so forth, do you believe that is was money well spent? The fawning from the media, very regrettable from my perspective, to be honest with you. Not a single critical question or point made. It's as if many of the journalists were all just part of the party, which I just don't think is very helpful. But anyway, that's just me as a consumer, not necessarily as someone who works in radio. In the Irish Daily Mirror today, it's one of these stories that's important to talk about, but I know if you've got a young one in the house that's not feeling well at the moment, or you're just a bit of a worrier, and I think we all worry about our children, these types of stories too are very distressing, but that maybe they are, not maybe, sorry, they are important in terms of making us aware. and trusting our instincts. I think even if we go to a GP or an out of hours service with the children, I think you have to trust your instincts. I know I talked about this before I was away, but I just feel it's really, really important. The parents of a 10-year-old girl who died after contracting strep A urged other parents to make themselves aware of the seriousness of the condition. In 2019, the Murphys from Mill Street in County Cork watched little Vivian deteriorate rapidly after she complained of a sore throat and had a rash. She told RTE, the nightmare began on Valentine's Day. Dermot Murphy collected his daughter from school and told how she was more subdued than usual and had less energy, but within hours she was seriously ill. Despite being told by three different doctors that their daughter's illness was viral, the Murphys still had their doubts. Mum Lily said that after 5 days, the rash was really angry looking and Vivian had pain and swelling in her leg. They panicked. The panicked parents rushed their daughter to Cork University Hospital, where a black mark was found on her leg. It was growing rapidly and the parents were told that their girl had a bacterial infection that had led to sepsis and she was going into shock. Dermot said the black mark was moving up her body and she would have to be taken to Temple Street in Dublin for amputation. After surgery, Vivian went into cardiac arrest, causing brain damage. The parents made the difficult decision to take her off life support and she died on March 1st of 2019. And God help them and fair play to them for speaking out, though. It's just really important, as I say, I understand that there's a reluctance to give out antibiotics, you know, because you give out too many or you take too many and they lose their effectiveness. But I think sometimes you kind of have to say, or do you, we really need these just to be on the safe side. I don't know. It's hard to know what the right thing is. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, as you know, don't you? 086 60 25,000. Get involved in the conversation. Have your say. You can give us a call too on 074 91 25,000. We're taking your calls on that number as well. Also, another wee thing just spotted in the paper, which I thought was the Irish Independent, I thought was a remarkable statistic, that sun-starved Irish shoppers now account for more than 60% of global sales of self-tan by pennies. With our often grey skies making our penchant for tanned limbs a bit tricky, it's hardly surprising Irish shoppers account for the vast bulk of the retailer's fake tan sales, outbuying shoppers across Europe and as far away as the US. But I don't think it's all about the sun either. I think people now, more so than ever, are recognising the dangers of too much exposure to the sun. And I think maybe that's part of it as well. So 60% of the global sales in Ireland, about 5% of that at least, are on the knuckles and the knees. But anyway, Councillor Albert Doherty joins us on the programme and it's deja vu, it's Groundhog Day. And that's no offence to you, Albert, because we're talking again about poor road signage in the Inishowen area as we approach into another tourist season that arguably perhaps has even begun already. Is it the same problems? We just can't get the basics right sometimes, I think, Albert.
As you're saying, we've had a bumper week or 10 days there with many, many activities, many, many visitors, and I think congratulations to all involved. But with that as well has come a number of incidents where local residents would have highlighted maybe their service road's been blocked by a visitor's car, or local residents saying their own local areas where they were unavailable to park their cars. And indeed, in rural parts, the farming community saying we have to carry on our farmer business. We love people visiting our resorts, people visiting our local headlands and walks. However, we need some signage or need some alertness for our visitors to say, slow down, take care, or be sensitive to the needs of families or residents who are here all the time in our community.
Right, so is there a particular problem area? Are you talking a peninsula-wide approach? And listen, we're talking about Inishowen at the moment, but I'm sure there are people listening in other high traffic volume areas of the county that will relate to this. Is, are we talking maybe a county-wide audit or some sort of consultation?
Yeah, I think it's county-wide. I mean, Fodge Ireland launched publicity there. They're welcome to Donegal, and that's something we're all very proud of, highlighting the county, highlighting the Wild Atlantic Way, highlighting the Inishowen 100, the drives, the resorts, the visiting in our own Malinhead and the Alpaca Way. However, the visitors, I'm saying that the council should be able to alert visitors where they can and when they can that we're in a rural area, or please be wary and sensitive to the needs of residents, and that there are parking facilities and there are opportunities to park, but just be sensitive to the needs of locals and the needs of the farming community.
So what is actually happening here? I know you've had some contact from people, but, you know, just to cut to the chase, are people accessing people's land, parking in the land, blocking entrance to fields?
No, I think like what kind of stuff's happening? In the rural areas, all the farming community and people that have contacted me would be saying, can we alert and direct signage which indicates, please take care, animals crossing,
the basic stuff,
farmer at work,
and we're heading into silage season as well, so we're going to see even more agricultural vehicles on the roads likely. See, this is the type of stuff needs almost immediate action, Albert. We can't really wait till September or October, or or the concerns of people aren't being addressed,
because this isn't just something I'd be asking council to respond to in the last week. In previous years, we've done it as well. And I think the council are also hindered by their adhering to a national signage
policy,
plan.
Really, isn't it? Yeah.
And there are items that we might want in our locality that aren't on that national plan of signs that are advertised, and the council locally feel, oh, we may be unable to help you there. And then, therefore, I think there should be support and encouragement for, if, example, in the farming, that they can erect their own signage, and maybe any guidelines and assistance there would be welcome. And then back to what also came up in the week or two past is to be sensitive to the locals who live there. Mm. And, you know, I would have had been given incidents where perhaps someone has gone on their school run, and when they come back into their local estate, their parking places occupied, and maybe occupied for a significant number of hours or for the day. And that's where I also mentioned maybe residents only or residents parking. It's now, about just, being just sensitive to the needs of all and wary of what's happening in rural parts as well.
I think we do have to be a wee bit careful, though, and that's perhaps why there are policies in terms of signage, because very quickly things can get very, very messy. And I'm sure you've got Tidy Towns groups in the area that you represent that might have a say on how much signage goes up and where as well. Like, it can't be ad hoc either.
No, I'd be wary of that. We certainly do have very, very active Tidy Town groupings here who, and throughout the peninsula and the county, who'd like to look at and analyse what results come back after an annual Tidy Town assessment. And be it signage or whatever, they can be very wary as to what is appropriate. But it's really what I'm asking is for the council to respond where they can to assist with parking, to respond where they can in respect to safety, to adhere to or to invite motorists to adhere to please keep service roads clear and be wary that emergency vehicles may be called to these estates. And all in all, it's just good citizenship.
Okay, well, we've put it out there now. We'll see what we get back on that. Thank you very much indeed. That is Councillor Albert Doherty there. He's calling for, as you heard, signage to be installed en routes to popular visitor attractions in Inishowen, warning of farming activities and residents-only areas. Have you got a real-life story of how that might affect you? As I say, not exclusively in Inishowen. I presume it is something that happens right around the region. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp and text to that number, 086 60 25,000. I haven't read that number in a week or so. Well done to Stramore National School students who will represent Ireland at the VEX Robotics World Championships in Dallas, Texas from April 25th to May 4th. You know, the talented team of students. We had a couple of their representatives on this show. They'd created a robot that had to fulfill certain functions and did so well. And they were doing a bit of a fundraiser to try and get the students out there. Well, obviously they were successful because they're heading out. Safe journeys to them, and we wish them great success. The VEX Robotic World Championships in Dallas are huge and a real prestigious event, and it's great to see them in attendance. Right, okay. Peter Madden is committee member of Solid Fuel Merchants Ireland, and he joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Peter. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
I would say we're talking now about coal smuggling. I think that's what it calls. It's called. It sounds a bit dramatic, but I suppose that's what it is. It's illegally brought into Ireland from Northern Ireland. €56 million it's costing the industry. I would say a big portion of that is around the border counties, Peter.
It would be, I suppose, concentrated around the border counties, but it has gone further down. It has been an issue down further in the Republic down through the years, and has been greatly exacerbated since the smoky ban back in October of last year, where bituminous and smoky coal was banned in the Republic through the Air Quality Act. Mm.
So, and Peter, when we talk about this, like, just to break it down into sort of like a pie chart for me, how much of this is sort of businesses buying this coal to try and please their customers, I'm sure, buying this coal, you know, and bringing it across the border in a flatbed, you know, in bulk? And how much of this is sort of, you know, people going back and forwards for three or four bags? Like, what makes up the 56 million?
We're actually trying to break that down at the moment due to the lack of enforcement. It's very hard to track.
Mm.
Those figures are based on a study that was done with Primetime Investigates back in October 21. So we, at the moment, are asking for better enforcement and a licensing process where if you are a fuel merchant in the Republic of Ireland, that you register and have a license so the inspections can take place. So if you don't have a license, the questions are asked why and where you're getting your stuff from, where you're getting your supplies from, and we'll be able to take it from there. But as I said, since October of last year, our members have seen a serious downturn in their business due to the issue that they cannot sell the smoky products anymore.
And then as well, too, though, how can you make sure that that's not because that people are being taxed out of and legislated out of burning coal, or maybe they're switching to turf or wood or something else, or maybe they're getting rid of the open fire altogether? Is it possible to sort of break down the impacts that might have versus the illegal importation of coal, this type of coal?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
How do we know that because of VAT increases or tax increases that people aren't moving away from coal rather than buying illegal coal? Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's plain to be seen at our doors that, you know, our customers haven't changed, but they're coming back to us. Where a person was buying 10 bags, they're now only buying 3 bags. And that's down to the market increase in the price of coal and the carbon tax difference between the north and the south. You're looking at the moment a €4.90 price difference per bag in a bag of coal, and that's going to increase to €5.80 come the end of this month. So it's pretty easy to see your customer is using something else. Yes, what are they using? We don't know. I mean, there hasn't been a major influx of retrofitting or anything in the towns that we see. The feedback we're getting from our members on the door is people are buying less, or do they stop buying at all? And we see it on the doorsteps. We see the different bags on the doorsteps. We see the different products on the doorsteps. We see these guys going around. They are, if you're doing your rounds on a particular day and you go around the following day, and you miss a customer, but there's a different bag at the door, well, they bought it off somebody else, and that's what you're selling.
And also, too, how much of it do you think is, I know this is anecdotal, Peter, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but, you know, it's the type of coal you can get as well. I would know people that prefer the old dirty coal. They find that the coal available in the Republic doesn't burn quite as well. So is that a factor as well as the cost, do you think?
Yes. I mean, okay, the new products in smoky coal they're very good, but they don't perform that well in an open fire. People, there is a demand for the smoky coal. It does perform better in an open fire, especially with a back boiler. It is a traditional thing, I suppose. People like the flame and the homeliness of it. And there is a case there that maybe people need to adapt to maybe fire doors or inserts or whatever for their open fires, for the smoked coal to perform better. But there is a demand out there for it. And while there is a demand and you have two different laws in two different jurisdictions on the one island, you're going to have this anomaly.
Yeah. But Peter, you would have saw this coming. You're not the first industry to be affected by sort of decisions made in Dublin that don't really recognise the fact that whether people like it or not, there is another jurisdiction on this island. You know, I'm thinking of minimum price pricing of alcohol, for an example. Do you know what I mean? If you live in Donegal or run a business in Donegal, you are going to see more people cross the border to get it cheaper. And as I say, Peter, you would have seen this coming, that you haven't just woken up and thought, well, where are all our customers going? We knew this was going to happen in advance.
Yes, we did see it coming, and we were told, but the only communication we got with regards to the implementation of the new regulations was from our suppliers. We were given a date at which smoky coal would not be available anymore. If we had overbought our smoky coal products, we were stuck with them after the 31st of August. We weren't allowed to return them. We weren't allowed to sell it. So you made the comparison there with alcohol. Alcohol is a licensed product, and you can be checked, and you can. There's an enforcement process there. There has been absolutely zero enforcement in this new law in the Republic since it began, and none of our members have been inspected. We were told we would be inspected. We were told that if we were found in breach, the product would be confiscated, and we would be fined. None of them have been inspected. We have an open door policy. We're trying to work. We're trying to comply, and we've been left die in the vine.
And ironically, you and the government at this point now, the decision has been made. You're on the same side of the argument. In that, I presume, Eamon Ryan and others don't want particularly dirty coal being burnt in the Republic. Now, I'm not saying it's all that. There's a price differential across the board. But I mean, what I'm saying is that. Yes, you're on the same side of the argument now, in that you want enforcement, and presumably the Green Party and others also want enforcement.
Indeed. I mean, we're not climate change deniers by any means. We are the people on the ground, and we want to work with the authorities, working hand in hand with the authorities to try to implement this clean air policy and make the changes going forward. I mean, we are not ready for the green process as such yet. I mean, there's still over 500,000 homes using solid fuels. Many of them relying on solid fuels all of the time. And while there is that demand there, there's going to be a market for coal. So if you have that many houses in the Republic using solid fuels, there's going to be a demand for this illicit product. So that's why we need the enforcement.
Yeah. And does it feel a bit, though, in terms of coal, that maybe it's a sunset industry, and that, you know, you've got the factors we've been talking about now. You have got also a certain amount of people, quite a lot of people, I imagine, that are cutting back on the burning of coal because of the cost implications of it. Is there a sense within the industry that it is in an irreversible decline?
Yes, and we would be looking for funding and support for any of our members, for all of our members that are in that situation, where any of those new legislation that's coming in that's going to affect our business, we're going to be looking for support and funding for it.
Okay, thanks for your time this morning, Peter. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, that's Peter Madden, Committee Member of Solid Fuel Merchants Ireland. 086 60 25,000 if you have a view on that, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. A listener says, please make parents aware. My son goes to college at McGee in Northern Ireland. We opted for this so we wouldn't be faced with the accommodation crisis and he could travel each day. We got approved for the Susie grant, but this was not transferable to a college in Northern Ireland, and we didn't know this until after he started. We are paying huge fees, which we really can't afford. We wish you had stayed in Southern Ireland. Okay, so made that decision. It's a great college as well, don't get me wrong, but obviously with the cost of accommodation, it seemed like a better option. But they say that the Susie grant is not transferable to a college in Northern Ireland. 086 60 25,000. Some comment here on the school system. Donna says, I'm having to fight all year for my son and daughter to get the correct funds for the resource classes for junior and leaving cert. Not enough teachers in the correct subject and taking on other stuff like LCA and extra TY classes, and the ones with resources are left suffering. That's already in the school, and other nationalities can come in and not have this issue. Again, 074 91 25,000 if you wish to have an opinion on that or to raise your own. Raymond emailed to say, I'm not a Joe Biden fan by any means, but on a personal level, you have to give him the space and the credit given how he emotionally responded to meeting the priest who had given last rites to his son, Beau, on his visit to Knock. Joe Biden is a human being just like the rest of us. The US press should have left him alone. I think they were just envious, not to mention being still anti-Irish, he believes. Has Councillor Doherty made any representations to the council requesting they buy the 4-hectare site in Carndonagh that would be ideal for social housing? Another, what about the sewage flowing into the sea and rivers in Donegal? Not great for tourism. What's the environmental team in Donegal doing about this? Another, fantastic to see Joe Biden welcomed with open arms by Ireland's clergy to Knock Shrine and Ballina, or Ballina, as he called it. Is this a sign that the church is relaxing its opposition to abortion and possibly same-sex marriage in the future? I don't see it as any sign in that regard. Right, yeah, like the people going into Derry with tanks to bring out oil, earning their money in the south and not even getting the local oil men to deliver. Greedy, greedy people, disgraceful. Some people, though, are compelled to purchase things when they're cheaper because of the money that they have available to them. I'm not in any way excusing it. It's not for me to judge, but I understand perhaps sometimes. We have a stove, the smokeless duck eggs. The smokeless duck eggs give off absolutely no heat at all. We've just stopped buying coal and are buying more oil to heat the radiators. We've gone from lighting the fire every day to maybe one day a week or 2 weeks. I find it's hit and miss. Sometimes they light up and they're great. Other times they don't seem to light at all in the open fire. And then you get up in the morning and you're sitting there with a lovely fire all a little bit too late. A caller says, I will use my so-called dirty coal, regulations or none. It's not a fossil fuel, nor is turf. They are plant fuels, which is, I don't know, coal is a plant fuel. I understand where you're coming from, but I think you might be just sort of trying to justify your decision, which is fine. It's up to you what you do. As I say, I'm not here to judge. Another, so I think smokeless coal providers should be doing more to educate people on why it's better than high sulfur alternatives. Maybe that will encourage more people to buy the smokeless coal they provide. Another, I didn't hear one comment on the health impacts of burning coal indoors during that conversation, and that's a missed opportunity. Indeed, I get where you're coming from, and it's something we talk about regularly on this programme. You sit in your front room with an open fire if you've got respiratory problems, or even if not, you are inhaling a lot of stuff you shouldn't be. And unfortunately, we have a very high rate of people's issues with breathing and what have you in this county. There's no doubt about that because we've spoken to the professionals in that area. How stupid is it? You can burn smoky coal in Strabane, but you can't in Lifford. We're all living under the one sky. Another, Greg, that smokeless coal has awful fumes off it and tons of ashes and waste, far more than ordinary coal. But I suppose it's the damaging stuff that it emits. Right, okay. Pat Griffin is Senior Inspector with the Health and Safety Authority. We are beginning a 2-week national inspection campaign with a focus on the safe use of tractors and quad bikes, ATVs they're called as well, on farms. As I say, Pat Griffin, Senior Inspector with Health and Safety, the Health and Safety Authority. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so give us the background stats, really, that make this type of initiative warranted and important.
Yeah, well, I suppose agriculture has probably the worst rate of fatal accidents in the workplace. So over the last 10 years, we've 190 deaths on farms, which is a shocking number. And we send our sympathies to anyone that's affected by these fatalities. And over that 10-year period, 86 people have been killed with tractors and other vehicles. So we're trying to focus the attention of farmers on the safe use of their tractors and other vehicles like quads and loaders. And we're coming out now and having this campaign because silage harvesting season is coming up soon and tractors and vehicles will be out in the roads again, out in fields, and there's going to be a huge amount of work done to gather the amount of feed that's needed for our population of animals, you know.
Yeah, and we talk about deaths and people losing their lives, and of course that is the important headline figure, but I presume there are many multiples of that number, people who are out of action, can't work, even maybe life-changing injuries.
Yeah, there's many, many very serious injuries on farms, and like, we don't get reports from farmers of their injuries. We get probably 80 reported per year. But when we rely on the National Farm Survey, we've actually got 4,500 serious farm injuries every year. So fatalities is only the top of the iceberg. It's actually the most horrendous thing for a farm family to have a farm fatality on their farm. So we need to stop the fatalities and we need to stop these very serious accidents. And a lot of them come down to the operation of tractors and quads. And we're trying to come out with this two-week campaign to ask farmers to, and contractors indeed, to start to do some preparation for the silage season. And while many farmers will use the same contractors every year, sometimes the drivers change and sometimes the conditions on the ground change. So, you know, the farmer and the contractor need to be working together. They need to make sure that the drivers and the operators of the tractors and vehicles are going to be competent, that the machinery is checked, like checking the brakes, checking the hitching systems, making sure that there's a good combination of equipment there. You know, and even looking at the system of work that they're going to use in the traffic management, giving a few sort of hints to the drivers about making sure that yard safety can be kept safe, having one-way systems, priority to certain drivers and certain loaders, and then, you know, maybe even putting up a mirror at a blind spot on the farm so that, you know, the yard safety can be done a lot better this year. So there's a lot of work that can be done, and we've prepared a new code of practice a number of years ago, and there's a particular risk assessment checklist within that, and I'd ask farmers and contractors to go into the new code of practice and look into the harvesting checklist. If to go down through those and answer all those questions and put things right, we can have a safer and less injurious campaign this year.
So what way will the campaign work then? Because, I mean, obviously there's an inspection element to it, but then you look at maybe some of the demographics of those that have lost their lives, and is it maybe too an important element informing people how to use equipment safely and what to check before you use the equipment, if you know what I mean. So how will you balance all that over the course of the next 2 weeks, and how do you actually engage? Are you calling out to farms, or what's happening?
Yeah, we're doing routine inspections. So, you know, I hope to have about 15 to 20 inspectors out over the next couple of weeks. They will do routine inspections on farmyards. They'll look to find the larger farm where there'll be a lot more action. They'll talk to the farmer and ask him a few questions about how they're going to deal with silage harvesting this year. They'll give him a few pointers and give him some ideas on how to improve things. I must say that, you know, farmers generally do a great job, but the amount of silage cut and the amount of work done on farms is incredible. They do a very good job, but I think we can even do better. We can actually stop some of these other fatalities. The other thing that the inspector will be bringing to their attention when they do visit the farm is to the new quad safety regulations. These regulations require training. It's mandatory training and the mandatory wearing of helmets from the 20th of November this year. So we're trying to encourage farmers to get out there now and try to get this training done and don't put it on the long finger.
In terms of just a quick one on the ATVs there, is it the case that if after it's mandated, if you don't wear a helmet on a quad, your insurance might not be valid?
I would think so. But that is down to the insurance companies that cover these.
Understood,
farms.
I get you. And then there's third party and first party and all that kind of stuff. Someone says, why don't we have something as simple as roll bar and quads? Why aren't they mandated?
Well, roll bars and quads are available. They are considered a safety accessory and they can be fitted to a quad bike. But they have to be CE marked. So there's a few CE marked quad overturn devices in this country. They're not mandatory in that there hasn't been enough research done to absolutely rule out the possibility of these rollover devices actually doing damage to the operator.
Exactly. Well, in a way, unless you were contained within the vehicle, like by a seatbelt or something, you could actually be injured by the roll bar if you happen to be thrown from the quad, presumably.
Yeah,
so
I
get that, actually. That makes sense.
Some of the manufacturers of quads are saying that now, but there's research going on in Australia and New Zealand, and we're tracking that closely.
In terms of this campaign, right, like, can your people sort of say, you know, we see problems here, you know, is there a level of enforcement here, or is this about advice and guidance, Pat?
Oh, it's about enforcement as well.
Yeah.
Inspectors will generally try to work with the farmer, and farmers are generally very cooperative and very compliant once these issues are pointed out to them. So normally when an inspector will point out a few things, the farmer say, yeah, you're right. I should have had that right. I'll get it done. But if the inspector forms the opinion that, you know, there's a bit of resistance there, that the farmer doesn't really see the point of it, you know, the inspector can make a decision on the ground to say, well, I'm going to actually issue a legal notice, a legal document that will require you to do this. And that's called an improvement notice. And if a machine is in such a bad order that the inspector forms the opinion that it could be dangerous to actually operate it, the inspector can issue a prohibition notice to prohibit the use of that machine. So we have our legal powers, but normally we get full cooperation from farmers once they get things that are pointed out to them. They're generally very compliant in that way.
Okay, and it's all about reducing and limiting as much as we possibly can deaths in and around farms.
Yeah, and I would appeal to farmers and contractors when this work is going on to make sure that our safety is looked at very, very closely. There is no place for children or elderly people that mightn't have the speed of movement. These people should be kept out of the yard, out of these busy times, and children shouldn't be carried in these tractors and large machines. That practice has to stop. We have to protect them. They are vulnerable.
All right. Thanks for your time this morning. That's Pat Griffin, Senior Inspector with the Health and Safety Authority, 08660 25000. Lots of you interested in the conversation about coal. Greg, just last month, my carbon monoxide alarm went off for the first time. Never done so before. Only thing I had changed was that I was burning smokeless coal. There has to be more fumes in this than the ordinary coal. I'm not really quite sure about that, but just be really careful, please, because it could be a number of things that could be triggering that alarm. Make sure it's not out of date and so on and so forth, and stay safe. A caller says, if our government stopped ripping people off, then the people could afford to heat their homes. They are the cause of all this. With the wages they claim, it doesn't affect them. Another, why has coal smokeless not come down in price in line with home heating oil and petrol and diesel? A lot of it's carbon taxes, isn't it? I'm not really sure how much of that coal is made up of the kind of products that you talk of. I really don't know. I know someone that mixes coal. His bags are open. That nicks coal, mixes coal. I don't know. Maybe oh, they provided mixed. Do they a mix of smokeless and non? I don't know. If it's smokeless coal, why is there still smoke coming out of my chimney? Well, I think it's what's in the smoke, maybe, rather than not smoking at all. But again, this is not my area of expertise. Maybe we need to get someone on that is an expert. A caller says, and probably some of the people doing this are getting the fuel allowance, then heading into the north for cheaper stuff. That's why all these allowances should be paid out in vouchers for. I just can't understand that lots of people are unaware that if you are approved for a SUSE grant in the Republic of Ireland, you can't get it in Northern Ireland. This is very unacceptable for people living in Donegal in close proximity to Northern Ireland, but fees are huge in there. And another one, we should be doing all we can to stop people burning coal in homes. It's highly carcinogenic, and the fact we have companies still profiting off of this and marketing coal at home is really disappointing. Now, I want to mention Tea with the Maggies is taking place on Saturday, the 22nd of April at 7:30 p.m. in the Irish Cultural Centre in Hammersmith. Trina Amraid Ní Donal and Mairead Ní Mooney, Moya Brennan, are all involved. On Saturday, doors open at 7:30 p.m. on stage at 8. Sunday, doors open at 7 on stage at 7:30. With experiences born of years in the music industry and an eagerness to reveal unexplored and untold possibilities, Tea with the Maggies are Trina Mairead, Mairead Ní Mooney and Moya Brennan, as I mentioned. These true Celtic women have ploughed their talents internationally for decades, achieving respect from their peers while picking up awards and commercial success along the way, not to mention the adoration of fans from all walks of life around the world. So that's going to be a great night if you're anywhere near the Irish Cultural Centre, Hammersmith, and also on Saturday evening in Dublin. We did have a performance there from Moya Brennan and Mairead Ní Mooney, and they were excellent as always, and struck a perfect tone. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Mary Coyle joins us now of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. And again, more flights carrying cancer patients from Donegal to Dublin are cancelled. Mary, how often are these flights being cancelled now?
Well, I suppose this past week, it's if they haven't been cancelled, some of them have been running late, maybe 2 hours late, maybe 3 hours late. So we've kind of had a week of it, and we thought it was settling down, as we had a couple of months ago. We had a really where we had 12 days in a row that flights were cancelled. But it seems to be that it's kind of happening now again, and it's impacting very much on the service that we provide.
Mm. And also too, it can be difficult to secure an appointment, and I'm sure those that are given their time to meet patients aren't happy if they don't turn up.
Well, that's it. As you say, it's very difficult to get appointments in Dublin, and people are waiting for appointments. People are going up for treatment, they're going up for operations that are scheduled. And then, you know, if the flight doesn't go, they're going to have to wait another couple of weeks for their appointment again. And I think, you know, what we're afraid of as well is that people will not think that the service is reliable. And at the moment, it's not reliable. Yeah. And I can only praise the staff that are in Donegal Airport. They are doing their very best. And I spoke to Eilish, the manager there, this morning, and all they have really is that it's operational problems, that's all they know at the moment. Mm. And it's very difficult for them as well, because they're down there with the patients, with not just the patients, people that are flying up for business and everything else. They can't help it, you know. It's a very difficult one. It's
got to the stage two, or we're very close to it. People aren't going to risk it. They're going to put alternative, more difficult arrangements in place, because the frequency is too often. So is the company saying anything? Yeah, of course, and I get it, Mary. Is the airline saying anything?
No, the airline, I think, you know, it's difficult enough for Donegal Airport to to get in touch with the airline, never mind us trying to get in touch. The last time that this happened, we tried several times to get in touch with the airline. We wrote to them. We told them that we weren't happy with the service, that it wasn't reliable, it wasn't good for patients. And to be quite honest with you, we didn't really hear back from them at all.
Right, that's disappointing, Mary. We're going to try and make contact with them and see what they have to say, because it's like the boy that cried wolf, isn't it? You're just going to try and endure the journey the other way if you aren't sure, you don't feel sure you're going to get to see your consultant or your doctor. Okay, Mary, listen, thank you for that brief update on that. And as I say, we're going to make our inquiries as well to try and get to the bottom of it, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Mary Coyle of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services. We're